Okay, hi, this is John Gabriel, and welcome to week two of the new you in the new year, 5-week total body transformation program. So we're talking about digestion, and we're going to get started in a little while because maybe about 30 seconds or a minute. I just want to wait and let people log on. So just bear with us for another 30 seconds or a minute or so, and we'll get started. Thanks. Okay. This is John Gabriel, and we'll get started. Welcome to the new you in the new year, 5-week body transformation series. This is week number two, and we're going to be talking about digestion. And from my experience recently, just the studies that are coming out right now, digestion is coming up more and more as a key in both weight gain and weight loss. And prior to maybe about a year ago, I would have said that the most important thing is emotional issues and stress causing weight gain, and I still think they're vitally important, and we're going to talk about them next week. I'm going to have to say that digestion is just important based on some of the studies that are coming out, and this is jumping ahead a little bit, but for example, and these studies with friendly bacteria are coming out all the time now, but one of the things we're going to be talking about is the bacteria in your stomach, in your intestines, the friendly bacteria versus unfriendly bacteria. There was a recent study that came out involving identical twins. Now, there were identical twins. One of the twins was overweight and one of the twins was thin. And they took the bacteria from the intestines of the overweight twin and they put it in mice. And those mice gained weight. Doing nothing else, not changing anything else that they gave the mice. They didn't change the food, nothing. They just put the bacteria of the overweight person into the mice, and the mice gained weight. Now they took the bacteria from the thin twin, put it in mice. Mice didn't gain weight. Then they took the bacteria from the thin person, and put it in the mice that had gained weight, and the mice lost weight. I mean, to me, that is shocking, 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 to think that bacteria. What's the type of bacterial flora in your intestines is going to determine your weight. If you think about the old paradigm of calories in, calories out, that's still out there now. Every program is counting calories and monitoring foods and talking about carbs, and nobody's talking about digestion, really, except really cutting-edge people like Donna Gates and Julie Daneluck, Donna Schwank, all these people that we talk about. Nobody's really talking about digestion. They're talking about behavior modification and exercising this way or that way and how many fats to have, how many carbohydrates to have. And it's really clear that we're talking about the wrong thing. We're talking about digestion. We need to know what type of bacterial flora is not only in our intestines but in our entire body, because that's going to determine as much as anything else that we can talk about whether or not you're going to gain weight or lose weight or how heavy you're going to be. Now, there's two main reasons why digestion plays such a key role in weight. Number one, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm excited, and I want to just talk about some two points that I want you to keep in mind as we're doing this presentation. But the two key things that cause digestion to affect weight is, number one, if your digestion is impaired, and we're going to talk a lot about why it would be impaired. If your digestion is impaired, simply put, you're not able to digest and assimilate nutrients, which means that you're starving on a nutritional level, and that's going to cause you to be hungry and hungry. Insatiably hungry. So we're insatiably hungry, we end up craving empty foods, and we just keep gaining weight simply because we're not digesting and assimilating our nutrients. The other reason why digestion problems can cause weight gain is because if your bacteria is impaired and the food that you're eating is not being digested properly, it starts to cause problems in your intestines. Your intestines start to leak. They become more permeable. And undigested foods in a toxic form go into your bloodstream, cause an immune response, and cause what's known as a chronic low-grade inflammation. And if you remember from last class, chronic low-grade inflammation activates your fat program. So it activates certain hormones known as pro-inflammatory cytokines. Some of them you may have heard of from different tests that you might have taken. They're markers for type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, heart disease, such as tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin 6, C-reactive protein. Some of these things you may have heard of, you may not have. But a chronic low-grade inflammation caused by undigested food leaking into your bloodstream and causing an immune response causes these hormones to be elevated, and these hormones activate your fat programs. They cause leptin and insulin resistance. Now, many of you listened to Dr. Ron Rosedale's lecture, and he is fabulous. He is a renaissance man, a leader in metabolic physiology when it comes to weight loss. If you haven't heard the lecture with Dr. Ron Rosedale, please do so. But his whole big thing is that somehow, and it's controversial and open to discussion how it happens, but somehow we become leptin and insulin resistant. That is, the cells of our body stop listening to the hormones leptin and insulin, and we gain and gain and gain. Our body loses the ability to regulate our fat stores. So it loses the built-in safety mechanism that says you're too fat, lose some weight, and you get an unregulated cascade of weight gain. That's from leptin resistance. Well, guess what? One of the things that causes leptin and insulin resistance is these pro-inflammatory hormones that I've just talked about causing an inflammatory response that basically tells the brain to stop listening to these hormones. It blocks the signaling of these hormones. So that's from digestion, simply put. And again, it's such a paradigm shift, because I'm not sitting here talking about how many calories you're eating or how many fats or how many carbs or any of these things. I'm telling you that if your digestion is impaired, it's blocking the signaling of leptin, which is causing you to gain and gain and gain. The signal blocking is what's causing it, not the calories. Do you understand? So it's a huge paradigm shift that we need to understand. So let's get into digestion and try to understand what's going wrong and what to do about it. So if you look at digestion, basically your digestive tract is a tube. It's a long tube that goes from your mouth to your anus. And it has different compartments, but that's all it is. It's a tube. And the quality of your digestion is going to be a function of what's going on in that tube. So what happens is we eat food. I'll just show you this diagram, and then we've got another diagram to make this more clear. But we eat food, and as we start chewing it, our saliva digests the food. And then we chew it up into little bits. It goes into our stomach, which I don't know if this mouse thing is going to work. You let me know, Aaron, if I'm doing this. Goes into our stomach, which is this little bag right here. And in our stomach, digestive enzymes come to break it down, and bile and acids come to break the foods down into really small parts. It then goes into our small intestines, and that's where the friendly bacteria go, and the friendly bacteria then eat all these foods and make it into microscopic particles, which seep through the intestines and go into the bloodstream. The rest goes through the large intestine, this big area around here, and out your anus. And that's it. One tube from one side to the other. We can look at it here with this diagram to show you again in a easier way to understand. So first, chewing. That's the first part of digestion, is chewing. So when we're chewing our food, saliva comes in, and the saliva has amylase and some other digestive enzymes that help break down starches and carbohydrates. And we chew, ideally we want to chew our foods into real small bits. Goes into the stomach. In the stomach, our body produces enzymes, our pancreas produces enzymes, and our bile gets secreted into our stomach, and the bile is very high in acid, and the enzymes, between the acid and the enzymes, they break the food down into really small parts, and then it goes into your intestines, where the friendly bacteria work on it, and the friendly bacteria break it into really, really minuscule particles, and they're so small, the particles are so small, that they can actually seep through the lining of our intestines into our bloodstream, and they're in small enough particles that they can go into our cells of our body, and that's how we get nourished, and then the rest that we don't digest goes through our large intestine and out our anus. So that's the tube. It's just one long tube. Let's talk about some of the digestion problems that we have. Number one, we don't chew our food properly. We're stressed out. We're in a hurry. Our fat programs are on, which causes us to eat really, really quickly. And so we're not getting the first layer of digestion is not happening. So the food's going into our stomach in too large quantities, too large chunks. And also the enzymes that are working on in our saliva don't get to work on it. So that's the first thing. Then many of us lack the digestive enzymes and the acids needed in our stomach to break down the foods. So our immune system competes for these digestive enzymes because our immune system uses these enzymes also to break down foreign bodies and foreign particles like bacteria and viruses that are in our bloodstream. So our immune system competes with it. And when our immune system is overworked, we're not going to have the enzymes that we need to digest the food. Also, in an old-fashioned diet, in a diet prior to men inventing foods, the foods were live, and live foods have digestive enzymes and coenzymes, which are enzymes that work with our enzymes to help with digestion. So we're not eating much live food, so we're not getting digestion enzymes from our food. According to Donna Gates, which her lecture is coming up in 2 days, please listen to her. She's just her lecture. She's my guru when it comes to digestion. Nobody else I think she's light years ahead of everyone else. The same way Ron Rosedale is light years ahead of most people in metabolic physiology, Donna Gates is light years ahead of everyone in terms of digestion. But she says that over time, as we get older, we do not produce enough stomach acid. So there you have it. The first two components, we're not chewing our food and the digestion isn't happening in the mouth. The digestion isn't happening in the stomach. And then what happens is it goes into our immune system or it goes into our intestines in two large chunks, and we're not able to break it down properly for several reasons, which we'll talk about. But here's something to think about is that your immune system, 80% of your immune system originates from your gut, from your intestines. And when your intestines are not healthy, which we're going to talk about, it causes a lot of immune problems. So things like allergies, food intolerances, asthma, Crohn's disease, thyroid problems, also chronic autoimmune problems like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia. Many of these chronic conditions are because our digestive enzymes are overtaxed, our immune system's overtaxed, and that's causing enormous problems, which lead to weight gain. Now, in addition to not having the enzymes that we need to break down our food, or the acids to break down our food, we're sorely lacking in friendly bacteria in our intestines. So there's several things that can kill friendly bacteria. For example, antibiotics. We all take antibiotics for one reason or another, and many physicians just recommend it for all kinds of different things. And sometimes you absolutely have to have antibiotics, there's no question. Other times it's debatable. But according to Donna Gates, one day of antibiotics kills your friendly bacteria in your intestines. So we kill the friendly bacteria in our intestines, and what happens is that when the friendly bacteria is gone, we get unfriendly bacteria known as yeasts, funguses, parasites, and various things like that that cause all kinds of digestion problems. Now, these yeasts and parasites actually feed off of sugar. So what happens is we become a host for trillions of little bacteria that want sugar. And we start eating all kinds of acidic foods and sugary foods because that's the environment that these unfriendly bacteria thrive on. So that causes a lot of problems. So if you look at all three of those things, we're not doing the digestion that needs to be happening in our mouth is not happening. The digestion that needs to be happening in our stomach is not happening, and the digestion that needs to be happening in our intestines is also not happening. We're missing enzymes. We're missing the acid that we need. We're not chewing our foods enough, and we're missing the friendly bacteria, and we've got these unfriendly bacteria. And these unfriendly bacteria, combined with certain foods that we eat, can cause tiny little tears in our intestine, as I mentioned. So, for example, certain medications, wheat and gluten and too much processed or pasteurized dairy, can cause a condition known as leaky gut syndrome. And what leaky gut syndrome is, basically, is the lining of the intestines gets little tears in it. So remember I said before that the way the food goes into your bloodstream is it gets so small through all the different phases of digestion that it just permeates through the lining of the intestines. And that's beautiful because it's in small enough particles that it can then enter the cells of your body. But if you've got tiny tears in the lining of your intestines, then what's happening is that the particles that are already being undigested by all the different phases not working properly is going into your bloodstream in a way that your immune system recognizes as a toxin. And because your immune system recognizes it as a toxin, it causes inflammation in the inflammatory hormones. And as I said before, remember, the inflammatory hormones cause a low-grade chronic inflammation that causes leptin and insulin resistance and activates your fat programs. And that comes from the tears in your intestines known as the leaky gut syndrome. So yeast and funguses and parasites and accumulated toxins, they all leak it, they all go through your intestines into your bloodstream, and all these things cause an immune response, which, as I said before, triggers these pro-inflammatory cytokines. Now, Aaron, I just want to mention, ask if you can ask Dan to send me a text, let me know if we're having questions. We will start to take questions soon, and I just want to make a point about questions. We get lots and lots of questions, as you know, and we do our best to answer every question. It just may take us, sometimes it may take us a day or two. My team, I think, is doing a fabulous job of answering questions. Sometimes I get bogged down a little bit behind, but I always try to catch up. Be patient with us and bear with us, but you can also ask the questions here in the class. And you can ask the questions in the question and answer sessions like we had last week. We're going to have another one next week where you can actually call in and talk with me. So Aaron, ask Dan to send me a text. Okay. So let me know if there's questions. So I didn't get that text. It just says Nadia is ready too. So Aaron, if you could ask her to send me a text, that'd be great. So as we spoke about before, going back to leaky gut, one of the things that's the biggest perpetrator of leaky gut is gluten, which is in many grain products, especially wheat, which we hear a lot about. So gluten is like a glue that basically gets stuck in your intestines. As a matter of fact, when my daughter was a kid, she used to go to primary school, she'd come home and she wanted to do arts and crafts. If we didn't have glue, she would make glue out of cornstarch, which is basically gluten. Wheat gluten and water. She'd take cornstarch and water, and I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm making glue." And she said, "That's how we make glue at school." Basically, this gluten, which we're eating in the form of breads and grains, is causing like a gluey substance that clogs up your digestion and also causes tears and permutations to your gut, making your gut more leaky and more permeable. Another one that does is it's dairy. So that's pasteurized dairy, not raw dairy, which we're going to talk about. So when you pasteurize the milk, it becomes very difficult to digest, and there's a reason why, and it makes perfect sense. What is pasteurization? Pasteurization is chemically altering the chemical structure of the milk through intense heat to make it impermeable or less permeable to bacterial invasion. And that's the reason why we do it. So there's not much bacteria in your milk. But guess what? If the milk is impermeable to or resistant to bacteria outside of your body, it's going to be resistant to bacteria inside your body for the exact same reasons. Because the same bacteria that exist outside of your body exist inside your body. So if the milk is resistant to bacteria, that means it's resistant to digestion. All processing is making the food resistant to bacteria, which means it's making the food resistant to digestion. So when it's resistant to digestion, we're not digesting it, our body actually recognizes it as a foreign body, not as a food, and we get an immune response, which activates our fat programs. It's a vicious, vicious cycle. Okay, I'm going to bring Dan in. She's got a few questions, and we'll take those questions, and then we'll keep going.
Hi, John.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, John. Hi. Line asks, I've been on anti-acid medication, Prevacid, for years for acid reflux. I have been overweight and have not gained more weight with this medication, but can you tell me if it keeps me from losing weight by affecting my digestion?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Lina, and we talk about this. I talk about this in the class with Donna Gates, which is happening in 2 days. And according to Donna Gates, it's the most dysfunctional type of medicine that is out there, the most dysfunctional. And the reason is because the problem in digestion starts because we don't have enough acid. So when you take an antacid, you're treating the symptoms of not having enough acid, because the antacid will stop you from feeling the gas and the belching and the burping and all the different things. But those things happen because we don't have enough acid in our stomach. So when you take an antacid, it further inhibits digestion. It is the most, according to Donna Gates, and you can listen to the lecture, the most dysfunctional type of medicine out there. So I would strongly recommend that you take digestive enzymes with a hydrochloric acid or bile in them, because that'll give you more stomach acid, which is really what you need. And then follow all the other suggestions that we're going to talk about in just a minute about curing digestion. Follow that for a while. Hopefully you won't need the antacids. And yes, it will make it infinitely easier for you to lose weight, because you're going to be digesting your food and you're not going to be causing this digestive chaos that results in inflammation and activating your fat programs.
Okay, thanks, John. Melissa asks, what do you think about HCL with betaine in pill form? And if you are for it, how much should we take daily? And what about kids, and how much should they take?
Yeah, this is actually new information for me in the lecture with Donna Gates. So in the last lecture with Donna Gates, she said HCL, which is hydrochloric acid, is something that you should take. But you can take it in enzyme form. You can take it with bile. You know, if the digestive enzymes have bile, she absolutely recommends that you should take it with meals. The actual amount I would take two digestive enzyme capsules with meals. For kids, I would take maybe one digestive enzyme capsule, not two, but only take them with meals. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Deborah says, surely the tears are being repaired all the time. So once you stop eating the foods causing them and you chew better, that should fix it quickly. Is that?
Well, quickly or slowly, that's the solution, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Okay, all right, thank you. Marisol asks about taking probiotics and digestive enzymes. Do they need to be taken separately? She takes a probiotic with...
Okay, sorry. So probiotics, and we'll talk about this a little bit further in the lecture again, but it's an important point. So probiotics can be taken on an empty stomach or with meals. And the reason is that there's two different philosophies about how to get the friendly bacteria into your intestines. So probiotics are capsules that have friendly bacteria in them to replenish the friendly bacteria in your intestines. Now, they have to go through your stomach to get to your intestines. And remember, there's all that acid in your stomach and all those other things that can destroy the friendly bacteria. They're a bit fragile, those bacteria. So one school of thought says that you should take probiotics on an empty stomach so that the acid won't be there, and it'll help the friendly bacteria go through the stomach into the intestines. Another school of thought says that you should take the probiotics with meals, because the food blocks the acid and protects the bacteria and allows it to enter the intestines. I say do both. So if you take probiotics maybe twice a day, maybe in the morning take them on an empty stomach, and then sometime during the day take them with meals. That's probiotics. Digestive enzymes are different. Digestive enzymes should only be taken with meals, because that's when you need them to break down the food. Whereas the friendly bacteria exist in your intestines all the time when they're there. The digestive enzymes only are there in your stomach when you have food in it that needs to be digested. So you only want them in there when you have food. So digestive enzymes should be taken only with food.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Melissa asks a really good question. How many probiotics per day should we take?
Yeah, everybody's different on that, and I recommend you take a minimum. You take one in the morning and one with meals. So that's two probiotics. But you can take up to five or six if you have digestion issues. And we'll talk about some of the symptoms of digestion issues in a minute. But if you have some symptoms of digestion issues, such as food intolerances, autoimmune diseases like Hashimoto's or chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia, anything like that, then you can take five or six probiotics a day. I'll sometimes take that many, just because loading yourself up with friendly bacteria is something that you can't do enough of. So okay, so Dan, let me get back to the lecture if I can, and then just text me and keep me posted. If anybody else has any questions, just put them in the chat box, and we'll keep going. Okay.
Thank you, John.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Okay. So So one solution to the dairy issue is raw milk whenever you can. So raw milk is not pasteurized. It's got lots of friendly bacteria, and it doesn't cause inflammation because your body doesn't recognize it as a foreign body. Your body understands it as food because it hasn't been chemically altered. So it's difficult to get raw milk, and in some places it's not even legal. And obviously it doesn't have the same shelf life as pasteurized milk. So you need to have it just really, really fresh. And there's different ways. If you go to a food growing co-op or a local dairy, sometimes you can get raw milk that way. And it's in my opinion, it's a great alternative. But in general, as I was saying before, almost everything that we've done to increase the shelf life of a food, that is to process it, and almost everything we've done basically compromises our digestion. There's a conflict of interest here, and that is that food manufacturers are processing foods because it's convenient for them, not because it's convenient for you. So why is it convenient for them? It's convenient for them because it has a longer shelf life. The foods don't have to be refrigerated, so it's cheaper to ship. It's cheaper to make. It's cheaper to store. It's better for retailers. Everybody wins, but you. And the reason you don't win is because it can't be digested. By definition, it's an inherent conflict of interest of food. That if it's processed, by definition, you can't digest it because you're processing out all of the nutrients and you're changing the chemical nature of it, so that your body can't digest it. If it can't be digested on the shelf, it cannot be digested in your stomach. That is the inherent conflict of interest of modern-day processed foods. So the reality is that when we process foods, we're not doing it. There's lots of good reasons as far as a manufacturer's point of view. There's lots of good reasons to process food, but none of them have your digestion or your health or your best interest at heart. They are for the manufacturers to make it much easier and much cheaper to ship and store foods. But if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. If the food's not being digested out in the air, it's not being digested in your stomach because the same bacteria that exist out in the air exist in your stomach. So if those bacteria can't digest it, your bacteria can't digest it. Then there's another problem that happens, and that is when we cook foods. So while I believe it's important to have some cooked foods, I'm not a raw food vegan or anything, you need to keep in mind that when you cook foods, you destroy the friendly bacteria and you destroy the digestive enzymes. And by doing so, then you make it even harder to digest your food because those foods, all those digestive enzymes and bacteria that was in the food aren't there anymore. So certain foods you have to cook, like broccoli, cruciferous vegetables, obviously animal protein. All these things need to be cooked, but other things don't need to be cooked. So I always tell people that I'm a raw food vegan that eats chicken, meat, and fish. And what I mean by that is I eat a lot of raw food. So most of my carbohydrates and fats are raw, but my animal proteins are cooked because they have to be cooked. But I get as much raw food as possible because it's got the friendly bacteria and the digestive enzymes. Now, some raw food needs to be either soaked or cooked slightly because it's got enzyme inhibitors, which we'll talk about. But for the most part, live greens and sprouts and things are really essential to add to your diet. Other things that cause digestion problems are stress. So when you have stress in your life, as we're going to talk about a lot next week, when you've got stress in your life, then it diverts the blood from your stomach into your muscles because of this fight or flight type of thing that happens when you're in a stressful state, and it makes you kind of less conscious. And so when you're less conscious, you're kind of shoveling food down your mouth. You're not paying attention, and all of these things cause food to become less digested. If poor sleep, certain medications kill your friendly bacteria. Certainly chemical treated water like chlorine, the chlorine in your water, well, guess what? They put chlorine in your water to kill the bacteria in your water, which is great and is important, there's no question about it, but it still kills the bacteria in your stomach too. So if you're going to kill bacteria, you're going to kill bacteria. It's just that simple. So you're killing the bacteria in the water, which is important, sure, but you're also killing the bacteria in your stomach. Food additives and chemicals also cause our body to lose our friendly bacteria. So some of the indications that you have digestion problems include skin problems, allergies of all type, not only just food allergies, but asthmas and any type of allergies indicate that there's a digestive problem. Asthma, as I said, chronic fatigue, autoimmune diseases like fibromyalgia, also Hashimoto's disease, which is a thyroid issue where basically your immune system gets confused and starts attacking your thyroid. And the reason your immune system gets confused is just so overworked because of this chronic inflammation and the toxins seeping into your bloodstream from the foods not being digested. So also emotional problems. So the interesting thing about digestion is when you've got digestion problems, it causes stress and negative emotions, which also then causes more digestion problems. So it feeds on itself. They did a study with rats where they took aggressive rats, they took the bacteria from the intestines of aggressive rats and they put it in calm rats, and those rats got aggressive. And they did the exact opposite. They took the friendly bacteria from calm rats, put it in aggressive rats. Those rats calmed down. So you can see that, so we're learning that the bacteria, the quality of the bacteria in your stomach affects so many things, including your emotional state, and then your emotional state affects then the quality of your bacteria and your digestion. So let's talk about how we can reverse this situation. So the first thing we want to do is start with a really good, high-quality probiotic each morning. That's really essential. So we talked about this. You want a probiotic that's got lots of different friendly bacteria. For example, the probiotic that we use and we recommend has 10 different strains of friendly bacteria. You want to take it each morning, but you also want to take them with meals. So once in the morning, once with meals, I would say. Adding digestive enzymes with meals, also digestive enzymes that have hydrochloric acid or bile, so that's the acids that help you digest, according to Donna Gates, is one of the most important things you can do. And that's new information that we got in the lecture that we just did with her, which you're going to hear in 2 days. So digestive enzymes with meals. Now, don't take digestive enzymes with every meal, because I don't want you to have to carry pills with you wherever you go. Keep the digestive enzymes at home, and in the mornings and evenings when you're having dinner and breakfast and dinner, take some digestive enzymes. Eat as much live and sprouted foods as possible. So sprouted foods are sprouts, sprouted legumes like chickpeas and mung beans and sunflower seeds. Sprouts are really good. They've got lots of enzymes and friendly bacteria. And fermented food, which we're going to talk about in a little while, is really important. Omega-3 oils like flax seeds and chia seeds, they're very anti-inflammatory. So they're really good to have, but you only want to have them cold. And you want to avoid refined vegetable oils, which is most of the oils that we put in processed foods. So all processed foods have refined vegetable oils. And again, what did we do when we refined it? We made it impervious to digestion, basically resistant to bacteria, to breaking down into corruption. And so it doesn't get broken down in your stomach either. It causes inflammation. It causes a lot of problems. So refined vegetable oils are one of the worst types of fats you can put in your body. There's lots of good fats, and we'll talk about them, but refined vegetable oils are the worst fats. So you want to eat digestive enzymes, as I said, in your foods, not just take digestive enzymes. So you want to eat as much live food as possible. Don't become a live food vegan, but make a big salad. Put your food. I know Heather Fleming, one of our nutritional consultants, always tells people, put your food on top of a salad. I always said to people, have a salad with your food. But what she says is more clever. She says, put your food on top of a salad, because when you say have a salad with your food, really what you're doing is you've got a couple of lettuce leaves that are on the corner of your plate. But if you put your food on top of a salad, it means you're filling your whole bowl with salad, and then you put your animal protein and your cooked vegetables on top of that, and you're getting a lot more of the salad. So as we talked about, friendly bacteria are really the key to getting to intestinal health and reducing inflammation. And there's lots of good ways to get friendly bacteria from the foods you eat. So one is the probiotics, but you can eat fermented foods. So some examples of fermented foods are yogurts and kefir. Now, typically yogurt and kefir are made from milk, which is pasteurized milk, which is not great, but there's other ways to make yogurts and kefir. You can make it from raw milk. You can make it from almond milk, coconut milk, coconut water. You can even just make them from water. And all you're doing, the traditional way to make yogurt is you take milk and you put these bacteria in called Lactobacillus acidophilus, and the bacteria then break down the sugars, which are called lactose. And as it eats that lactose, and as it does it, it ferments and it makes it a sour, thick consistency, which is the yogurt, and that's just the bacteria eating it. And then when we eat the yogurt, we get the friendly bacteria. But again, if it's pasteurized milk, it can cause inflammation. So you can make these yogurts and kefirs by putting the friendly bacteria in whatever it is you want to make. It could be cashew butter or cashew milk, almond milk, hazelnut milk, hemp milk, coconut milk, raw milk, coconut water, or just water, and just putting these friendly bacteria in, letting them soak overnight, and you've got a yogurt and a kefir that's really good for you that doesn't cause inflammation. So sauerkraut and kimchi is the Korean version of sauerkraut. They're fermented cabbages and fermented vegetables. They've got friendly bacteria. So fermented soy. Now, normally I don't recommend soy products, but when they're fermented, they are actually quite good for you. And tempeh, miso, and tamari are examples of fermented foods. Nutritional yeast, also known as brewer's yeast, is a fermented food, and there's lots of others. Pickles, black garlic. You can basically ferment and preserve any vegetables of any kind. I recommend that you visit a site. We interviewed a lady, Donna Schwank. First of all, watch the video that Donna Gates made that's in the members area on how to ferment food. So watch that. And also go to Donna Schwank's site, culturedfoodlife.com. She's got 400 recipes on cultured food. Now, what I'm learning, when I look at Donna Gates, I met Donna Gates. She's one of the healthiest people I've ever met. Her body looks very, very young. Like, the skin on her hands and arms looks like the skin of a 15-year-old or a 12-year-old. She's got that conscious, no wrinkles anywhere. Her body's very fit and thin, and she says genetically she should be overweight, she should have type 2 diabetes, all these different things. Almost everything she eats is fermented, and she's 68 years old. Her hair is naturally black. There's no gray in her hair. She looks like she's 48 or 50 at the most. I was stunned when I heard that. But most of her food's fermented. It's cultured, it's fermented. It's a whole philosophy of eating that will totally change your biology and your body more than anything in the world. So now we've got lots and lots of questions. So I'm going to bring Dan in and ask a few more questions, and then we'll finish up the webinar, and then we can keep going with questions after that. So Dan, you there?
Hi. Yes, hi, John.
Hi.
Okay, Marisol has a couple of questions.
Yes. Hi, Marisol.
Hi. I have been looking into better. I took a metabolic typing test early last year, and it recommended that if you have Hashimoto's, that you stay away from nightshade vegetables such as broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, kale, etc. Okay. This was upsetting because I really enjoy these ones. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether you agree with this recommendation, or if you've heard about these veggies exacerbating hypothyroidism.
Yeah. So there are some schools of thought that believe that, but I would recommend that you can continue to have those foods, but have them cooked, and just focus as much as possible on having lots of friendly bacteria, lots of digestive enzymes, lots of fermented foods. And we've found from lots of examples, including experts out there that have cured themselves of Hashimoto's disease, that's a really great way to treat it, because you're making your immune system as strong as possible. So don't overdo it when it comes to broccoli, and especially not kale, because of the goitrogens in kale. So don't overdo it, but having them occasionally is a big problem.
Okay. Another question from Marisol. I understand that it's better to pre-soak nuts to activate them for digestion before eating.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Besides better absorption into the body, does soaking them also prevent the fats going rancid or some other undesirable chemical reaction?
It doesn't necessarily prevent the fats going rancid, no. But all nuts and seeds have a lining around them that's called an enzyme inhibitor. And if you think about from this class today, what that means, enzyme inhibitor, means it inhibits enzymes. Literally, it stops the enzymes from activating on the nut and seed so that you're not digesting the nut and seed as well. And the reason why nuts and seeds have enzyme inhibitors is because if you think about the way plants propagate, the way they propagate is they have some sort of fruits or vegetable or whatever it is that a bird eats. So the bird will eat the fruit. It'll also eat the seeds too, but the plant does not want the bird to digest the seed. The plant wants the bird to eliminate the seed. So typically what happens is the seed goes out of the bird with other things in the elimination process that aid in sprouting. So lots of fertilizers. So as we know, excrement can be a great type of fertilizer. So it's great for a plant. So what happens is the undigested seed plus the fertilizer goes into the ground. It helps the seed sprout, grow roots, and then that's how the plant propagates. It does not want you to digest the seed. Now the healthiest fats are in the seeds and in the nuts, but we have to eliminate those enzyme inhibitors in order to digest them properly. So if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. So when you soak nuts and seeds overnight, chia seeds you only have to soak for maybe 10, 20, 30 minutes. When you soak them, it breaks down the enzyme inhibitors. So there's you can even buy activated nuts and seeds. In Australia, for example, there's a company called To Die For that makes nuts and seeds that are literally to die for. They are the best nuts and seeds I have ever tasted in my life. And what they do is they activate them and then they dehydrate them. So when they dehydrate them, they get real crispy and crunchy, but the fats don't get destroyed because the temperature of the dehydration is not that high. So and they taste, they digest well, you're getting the fats, you're getting other nutrients. It's really the way to go with nuts and seeds. Okay?
Okay, thanks, John. Marisol also asks, why is raw milk not inflammatory? What is it about raw milk that...
Okay, so the real question is, what is it about pasteurized milk that's inflammatory? So what it is that's inflammatory about pasteurized milk is that when you pasteurize it, you change the chemical nature of it so that your body doesn't recognize it as a food. And so if it's going into your bloodstream, your body's not recognizing it as a food, it's recognizing it as a foreign body. And a foreign body causes an immune response, which is an inflammatory response. So raw milk doesn't have that because raw milk is a food. It's got friendly bacteria. It can be digested by your bacteria, and you act on it and you digest it. The pasteurized milk, your bacteria can't digest, and so it's a foreign body that causes an inflammatory response.
Okay, thank you. Deborah wants to ask about this. She wants to ask a question regarding the subject of changes in bowel movements. The reason she asks, I was diagnosed some 15 years ago with ulcerative colitis, and it's okay, she's using Eastern style modalities. She takes herbal supplements diagnosed by Dr. Marcel Pick for adrenal balancing.
She's great. Marcel Pick is great. Big plug for her, she's really good.
And for over 10 years, she's been taking flax oil in the form of capsules. She's wondering, with the increase in probiotic digestive enzymes and healthy eating, introducing maca every day, as well as spirulina and chia, lemon water and cider vinegar, would you recommend that she comes off the herbal supplements for her adrenals or slow down on any of the above?
Well, Marcel Pick is really into it. She's one of the most knowledgeable holistic doctors that I know. So I would ask her that question because she's going to understand why I'm making the recommendations I'm making. So absolutely ask her that, how she feels about the answer. My initial answer is no. There's no reason to go off of the herbal supplements. They don't conflict with each other at all. But do check with Marcel Pick. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Dana asks, you briefly mentioned diurnal reversal and depression and its effect on nighttime eating. Would you be able to elaborate?
So what happens when we're in a stressful state is our cortisol levels get reversed. So our cortisol and other stress hormones. So our cortisol has a diurnal cycle. It means it's got a cycle throughout the day. So the way it's supposed to be is our cortisol levels are supposed to be higher in the morning, which causes us to be hungry in the morning, and then lower at night, which causes us to be not hungry at night. But when you're in stress or depression or having emotional issues, that cycle gets reversed. So that's why a lot of people say, I'm not hungry in the morning, and then they're famished at night. So if you're not hungry in the morning and you're famished at night, it's a stress response. Now, the stress response can come from emotional issues, but it can also come from having the wrong bacteria. If you've got the wrong bacteria, as it's been shown through studies with laboratory animals, if you've got the wrong bacteria, it can cause stress and depression. So our minds and our bodies are so interwoven that you can't separate one from the other. So where does the stress come from? Is it a physical thing? Is it an emotional thing? Is it a physical thing that's causing an emotional thing? Or is it an emotional thing that's causing a physical thing? We don't know, and that's why we take a mind-body approach and an all-points approach toward mind-body health. And in this, and in the next 5 weeks in this class, we're going to look at all these different things, so that whatever's causing that stress will go away, and you won't have that rhythm, that the cycle, your diurnal cycle reversed, and you'll be more hungry in the morning and not at night. When you stop being hungry at night, know for sure that you're addressing the stresses in your life, the fat programs are being turned off, and it's only a very short time before you start losing weight.
That's a lot of people ask the question about nighttime eating, so thanks for that. Diana says, I'm 48 years old and menopausal. She doesn't want to take hormone replacement therapy. What can you tell about taking hormone?
I would recommend that she talk to the lady we just spoke about. Her name is Marcel Pick, or Dr. Sarah Gottfried. You can look them both up on the internet, or you can see them in our support group. We can get the, we had interviews with both of them, and if you don't have copies of it in the members area, we can make them available to you. Watch those, contact those. Those two doctors are really, really great in natural balancing and menopause. They're fabulous. So I would go with them. Dan, I just want to go back to the nighttime eating and say that I had the worst case of nighttime eating. Nighttime hunger of anyone that I ever met, because I don't care what I was doing. If it was 11 o'clock at night and I didn't have some bread, some pizza, some donuts, something, carb, starchy thing, I couldn't go to sleep. And all that's gone. And it's been gone for 10, maybe even 12 years at this point. And that's not magic and that's not willpower. That is dealing with the stresses. So this is what happens with everyone. And the most common thing that I find with people when they take this approach is sooner or later they say, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm just not that hungry anymore. And that means your body wants to lose weight.
There'll be so many people happy to hear you talk about that, actually.
For sure. There's just a few more slides I have to go through, and then, Dan, I'll bring you back on. Whoever wants to ask questions, we can talk then. So thanks very much, and we'll come back in a little while.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Okay. So getting back to just different ways of healing digestion, cooking with stable saturated fat. So saturated, medium, the best are called medium chain. It doesn't say it in the slide, but medium chain triglycerides or medium chain saturated fat, such as coconut oil. And another good one is ghee, which is clarified butter. Organic butter is from grass-fed animals is okay too. And another one is avocado oil. I think we talked about it in the last presentation. These are the right foods to cook, right fats to cook with, because they don't get corrupted at high temperatures and they're not inflammatory. They're actually quite good for you. So when you're cooking something, you want to cook with medium-chain saturated fats that are stable at high temperatures, such as coconut oil. Ghee. Make sure it's cold pressed coconut oil. Sometimes they refine it, and that kills the whole benefit. Ghee. Make sure whatever the oils are, all oils should be cold pressed. So another thing we want to do is we want to find alternatives to processed foods. Obviously, so all of these foods are causing digestive nightmares in your system. Your body's not digesting them. They have no nutrients. They're addictive. So that, and listen, manufacturers know what they're doing. If you think about the food industry, it's probably the biggest industry in the world. It's the thing we spend the most money on, you know, is food. So it's a multi-trillion-dollar industry, and there's some big players, not that many either, which is scary. So there's some big players in a multi-trillion-dollar industry. They're going to know how to get you to like a food. So they're going to take something that has that has stripped of nutrients, not digestible, inflammatory, and addictive. They're going to make it addictive, and that's what we're up against. And then they're going to show you these commercials at 11 o'clock at night that are going to drive you crazy. They got a lot of money, and they know what they're doing, and they're out to sell you crackers and chips. That's what they're out to sell you, and we all become addicted to these things. So we have to go through a process. Now, the process, again, as you know, I don't believe in restriction, not because I don't think you should eat these things. I just think that it causes a scarcity mentality. It activates your fat programs. It makes you feel like a deprivation, and it's not sustainable. So the opposite is to add really, really healthy foods, as we talked about, fermented foods, live foods. But there's also really good ways to get healthy cakes, cookies, muffins, using flours like coconut flour and chia bran and almond meal and nuts and seeds. And I want to tell you, I had my 50th birthday last night. And I had it catered by a raw food company that makes the best cakes I've ever tasted in my life. And when I say best cakes, I don't mean best raw cakes. I don't mean best healthy cakes. I mean the best cakes I've ever tasted. And I just, Aaron, I just want to bring Dan in for a second because she was there. And I, Dan, what did you think of those cakes that we had last night?
They were, particularly the banoffee, that was amazing. Yeah, yeah. That was just absolutely incredible. That was,
when you compare that to just any cake, okay, so forget if it's good for you or not, just compare it to any cake, how did it rank?
As I said yesterday, the biggest test was my 9-year-old son, who won't eat anything and everything's yuck and I won't eat this and I won't eat that. He ate the chocolate cake without even questioning the fact that it was raw and good for him.
And my daughter did too, and the actual components of the food, of the cake, she wouldn't have eaten on their own. So like nuts and seeds and all of these different things. The cakes were divine. There is really clever ways to make delicious foods out there, and we're going in this direction all the time. I'm going to be meeting next week with one of the ladies that was here last night at my birthday party from Organic Sisters, Brooke from Organic Sisters, to do a whole series on making healthy desserts like the ones we ate last night. But in general, you're using a base that's got nuts and seeds instead of grains, processed grains, which cause elevate your insulin levels and cause inflammation and cause digestive problems. They're all activated, so you've got friendly bacteria in the crust itself. Then you're taking raw cacao, coconut palm sugar, which is an easy sugar to digest, it doesn't elevate your blood sugar too much. Things like avocado and fermented cashew that's mixed into a cream to make a creamy base. All of these different things. That was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. So all these different things will allow you to create something really healthy that you'll love, your kids will love, and will allow you to compete taste-wise with the multi-trillion-dollar manufacturing company that wants you to just stay addicted and in a food scarcity place where you're always chronically starved and wanting more and more. So we have some in the recipe book, but you know, since we made the recipe book 3 years ago, we've gotten a lot better at this. So we're continuing to update with different videos, so stay tuned and you'll learn a lot more. But you can do research on the internet for raw cakes. A lot of raw cakes use dates. I don't recommend too much date because date elevates your blood sugar too quickly. I don't recommend agave either. We prefer coconut palm sugar as a sweetener. So when you do the search on the internet for raw cakes and raw sweets, use coconut palm sugar and stevia, a combination of coconut palm sugar and a little bit of stevia as the sweetener instead of the dates and the agave. That's the ones. Other than that, they're usually good to go. But in general also, anything that existed 10,000 years ago is for the most part is good for our body. It's not processed. Our bodies know how to digest it. It's got it's got active digestive enzymes. It's got friendly bacteria. It can spoil. So if you're looking in the supermarket, what they say is you should shop the perimeter of the supermarket. And what that means is the perimeter is usually where the electricity is. So they put the refrigerators and the frozen foods in the perimeter. And I'm not talking about frozen pizzas here. I'm talking about frozen real foods and refrigerated real foods. And they have to be refrigerated and frozen. Why do they have to be? And this is really simple. And you should know the answer to this question probably already before I even ask it. Why do they have to be refrigerated? They have to be refrigerated because bacteria, airborne bacteria, will start to act on the food and digest it outside of your body. And that's because it's digestible food. And if airborne bacteria can digest it, then the bacteria in your stomach or in your intestines can digest it. So if it can go rotten quickly, then it is easy on your digestion. So shop the perimeter of the food market. Eat as much raw foods as you can. Again, as I mentioned before, things like broccoli and cruciferous vegetables, they need to be steamed because they've got an enzyme inhibitor lining to them. So you got to steam those. But green leafy vegetables, sprouts, salads, all those things do not need to be steamed. Really, really healthy. Green juice is really good. So a green juice that's got things like celery, cucumber, lettuce, Swiss chard, kale, parsley, cilantro, spinach, when you juice these things, you activate all the enzymes, especially if you juice them in a slow-press juicer. If you juice them in a slow-press juicer, it's not going to kill the enzymes, and it's they're very alkaline. And so you're getting enzymes into your stomach. You're also it's very pre-digested food, so it actually goes right through your stomach and your intestines into your bloodstream, into your cells, so it's a great way to nourish your body. And I find when I have a good green juice in the morning, I'm simply not as hungry the rest of the day. So as I said, you can make the idea with a green juice, one thing, if you're making a juice, you don't want too much sweet vegetables or fruits. So things like beets, carrots, apples, or any type of other fruits, pineapples, you don't want to juice them. You can eat those foods all you like, but when you juice them, you concentrate the sugar. And remember I said that the sugar goes right into your bloodstream, or the juice goes right into your bloodstream? Well, when the juice goes right into your bloodstream, the sugar goes right into your bloodstream, and it elevates your sugar too quickly, and that causes blood sugar problems that can lead to weight gain. So try to make your juices with as much real greens as possible, and only use the sweet ones if you absolutely need them for the taste. So my ideal juice is I usually get celery, cucumber, lemon, ginger. I might put some spinach in there, and then I put ginger and turmeric because they're very very anti-inflammatory. That's my favorite juice, and I prefer it to sweet juices at this point, but it takes a while to get to that place where you prefer a juice like that. So other ideas for getting into improving your digestion is you want to chew your foods really well. So one of the things that Donna Gates talks about is right before you eat, just put your hand on your heart and breathe for a minute. Just take a couple of deep breaths. It puts you in a relaxed state. Chew your food really, really well. The enzymes will act on it in your stomach. Be in a calm, centered state. And again, make it a salad as much as possible. We don't have this in the slide, but sometimes in the presentation we talk about, there's a study that David Wolf talks about that this guy, this researcher 50 years ago named Kuchkov did, where he found that if you're eating cooked foods, what happens is you get something called leukocytosis, which is an increase in your white blood cells, which again is an immune response because your body's recognizing it as a foreign body, and that's causing an immune response, which is an inflammatory response, which can cause you to gain weight. And we talked about that through the presentation. But this guy Kuchkov found that if 50% of your food is raw and it has digestive enzymes, you do not get the leukocytosis. I don't know if that study's ever been replicated, and it was a long time ago, so I'm a little bit sus. But in general, I find that, let's say, a meal for me sometimes, I might get a chicken, and like a free-range chicken that's cooked, and a big salad, and there's a certain proportion that my body just knows that if I'm running out of salad, I go back and top up salad. I can't just have the chicken. I need to have the salad with it, and so I can tell that my body's got a certain ratio that it wants of healthy live foods. So that's what you want. You want to put as much salad in with your cooked foods as possible. So let's talk about some action steps for this week, and then we can answer some more questions. So the first action step that I'd like to add to the action steps that you have already is, if you can, drink a green juice, as we just talked about, something that's mostly green. Have it first thing in the morning or have it in the late afternoon. Those are the best times to take green juice. Have two digestive enzyme capsules once or twice a day. Don't carry them with you, but have them in the morning. Have them at home. So in the mornings at breakfast or in the evenings at dinner, have digestive enzymes with meals. This week's visualization, the morning visualization, so remember, in this class, every single morning we're doing a visualization. I made a visualization called Healing Your Digestion. I'm pretty sure it's in the members area. If it's not in the members area, Dan, can you just check? If it's not in the members area, we'll get it in there today. I'd like you to listen to the Healing Your Digestion visualization as the visualization of choice in the morning. Now, you can listen to other visualizations too. For example, if you really like the Safe, Strong, and Protected visualization, then listen to that. Okay, Dan tells me that the visualization is in the members area, so great. So listen to that in the morning. You can listen to other visualizations in the mornings or afternoons. There's no limit to how much visualization you can do. But I would like the visualization of choice to be the Healing Your Digestion morning visualization first thing in the morning. Then going back to our ongoing action steps, you want to do the evening visualization before bed as long as that's suitable for you and that's working for you. The morning visualization we talked about, you want that to be the heal your digestion visualization. We talked last week about taking probiotics with breakfast. I'd like you to continue to do that. Drinking the water that we talked about first thing in the morning plus throughout the day, we talked about, like, you continue to do that. Eating a really good Gabriel-friendly breakfast with some protein, some omega-3 fatty acids, and some live food, and eating frequent meals during the day to keep your blood sugar stable. So those are ongoing action steps. So if you follow these action steps for this week, and if you have any questions, ask me either now or in the question and answer or in the forums, and we'll try to answer them. Do listen to Donna Gates' interview happening in about 48 hours, actually 47 hours to be exact. That is a phenomenal interview. Go to Body Ecology and watch the videos that we have in the members area on fermenting foods. Watch the go to culturedfoodlife.com and learn about fermenting food. Go online and learn about raw food, making raw food desserts. Again, use coconut, palm sugar, and stevia. Don't use the sweeteners that they normally choose. Look at our recipe book for healthy snacks and start adding lots of real, live, healthy foods that will counteract the addiction that we all have to processed junk food. So that's it for this week. I will take some more questions because Dan's got lots of questions. You can stay on if you want and listen to the questions. Otherwise, have an awesome week. Let's talk. We're very, very active. I can see you all in the Facebook forums and in our members area. Lots of questions, lots of great energy. People are starting to feel massive improvements already, which I think is phenomenal. So let's keep communicating. Let's keep going. This is going to be the best, healthiest year of our life. I'm 50 now. I'm in a new decade, and this decade I'm going to be healthier than I've ever been, touch wood, and I'm focusing on really, I actually feel myself getting younger and more healthier through digestion, through increased meditation, and all the visualization, all the things we talk about. So let's keep working toward an amazing year by creating some really positive, healthy habits. So thanks very much, everyone, and Den, I will bring you in now.
And, yes, I'm here.
Okay, you can ask me some questions. We'll go for another 10, 20, maybe at the most 30 minutes if there's questions, and otherwise we'll answer the questions as best we can in the forums. Okay?
Okay, thanks, John. Judy just wants to ask what you think of gluten-free bread. I get it from my bakery, so it's not full of sugar or chemicals. Is it okay?
It depends what it is made out of. If it's made out of potato starch and rice flour, you're still elevating your insulin levels a lot. So as a bread alternative, a couple of things. One is I have flax and chia seed crackers, which give you a good kind of cracker sensation. You can make chia seed wraps, which are slightly dehydrated chia seed circles that you could wrap foods in that are made out of vegetables and chia seeds. That's great. I use nori sheets as wraps. And I'm starting to experiment with making breads out of chia bran. So again, it depends. There is a type of bread that doesn't cause too many problems, which is the Essene breads, or the breads that are in the freezer and the refrigerated area, again for the exact reasons. So if this bread is processed enough that it's not in the refrigerated area, that's a huge red flag. So if you're getting it in the refrigerated area and it's soft and mushy and feels and tastes like there's live ingredients, that's a better bread alternative. Okay. Den?
Thanks. Susan asks, I have eliminated flour and sugar in my diet and focusing on eating healthy with no processed fruits. I'm taking probiotics. Should I be taking food enzymes too?
Is it important
to be conscious of foods with high glycemic indexes such as rice and potatoes and corn?
Yeah, well they're grains, so yes, the grains in general are just I have to say at this point there's never a time when I crave grains anymore, because as soon as I eat them I feel an insulin rush in my body. Grains typically elevate your insulin levels, which then causes leptin and insulin resistance, as Dr. Rosedale talked about. And if you haven't listened to Dr. Rosedale's interview, please do. But all grains cause an elevation in your insulin levels, which cause leptin insulin resistance. So if you look at the cakes that we ate, the only thing that's going to elevate your insulin levels at all is a little bit of coconut palm sugar, and just a little bit. Nothing else in there. Everything else is healthy fats and proteins. So you want to eat foods that do not cause an excessive elevated insulin response. Grains all do. So it's best whenever you can to find alternatives. And you know, I used to have to have rice and all these type of things. And now when I look at rice, I think if you actually eat rice, there's not a lot of taste in it. I mean, it really is. It tastes like little bits of packing. There's nothing there that would say, oh, I got to have some rice once you're no longer addicted to the insulin rush. So have your carbs as live as possible whenever you can. So I would rather you had, from a calorie standpoint, three times as much carbohydrate if it was in the form of salad than rice, because it's not going to cause the insulin problems and it's going to cause so many positive problems. So even if it doesn't have gluten, if it's a grain, it's still not ideal, but if that's where you're at right now, that's okay too. Just keep the focus on adding. Your body will get healthier and healthier, start to crave the more real live food. It's really a process of undoing and educating your body. You're educating your body about the way it's supposed to be. You're undoing all the damage from years of being fed processed addictive foods from a trillion-dollar food manufacturing business. Okay?
Yeah, I agree. Susan asks, this past weekend my adrenals were very stressed and in a healing crisis. This seemed very strange to me since I had not been eating any sugar or flour for over 3 weeks. Do you have any ideas as to why this might have happened?
Well, two reasons. One, because you're having a cleansing response from being healthier. That can cause an emotional response and a stress response and a detoxification response. So that could be the reason you're having a healing crisis. But adrenal fatigue also comes from mental and emotional stresses. We're going to talk about next week. And I would suggest that you listen to the Safe and Protective Visualization in the morning, in addition to the digestion one, if you can. Just to have that kind of calm, relaxed feeling that visualization gives you to take care of the adrenal fatigue.
Okay. Well, Melissa's question sort of ties in with this as well. My allergy symptoms have actually been worse since starting all of this, especially nose and throat with lots of phlegm. Is this normal?
It can be. That can be a detoxification. That's one of two things. One of three things. So one of the things is you're eating something new that you're allergic to, and that's causing a problem. Two is that you're detoxifying your body, and those are detoxification symptoms. And three is that there's some sort of emotional response that's coming up from the visualizations, and your body's reacting to it in a physical way. So I would want to rule out that you're not introducing foods that you're allergic to, and then the other ones are actually kind of healthy. They're just part of the healing process. So you know, the other thing about modern medicine is that we're taught to mask symptoms: runny nose, coughing, sneezing, temperatures. These are ways of fighting toxins and fighting foreign bodies and viruses and bacteria in your body. That's how your body does it. And we want to fight those symptoms. Is it the symptoms the bad guy? The bad guy's not the symptom. The bad guy is the thing you're trying to get out. So a lot of times all these things you're experiencing is your body trying to get something out. And it's great that your body's able to try to get something out, because normally we're so overwhelmed through stress and toxins and processed foods, our body can't even get to the point where it can even bother trying to eliminate. So if you're at that place, it's a huge progress.
Okay. Marisol asks, regarding raw natural dairy, in the USA it's hard to find. What is the huge concern here in the US with unpasteurized dairy, and how can we make safe choices?
Yeah. So the dairy in the States, it all came from hundreds of years ago, when what happened was they were feeding cows the byproducts from the grain byproducts from alcohol production. And the cows were getting very unhealthy, and they developed tuberculosis. So if a cow's got tuberculosis, the tuberculosis bacteria is going to be in the milk, and then people started getting tuberculosis. So that's when they started pasteurizing the milk, which makes perfect sense. But if the cow is healthy and the cow doesn't have tuberculosis or any other type of problems, then the milk's not going to either. It's not going to acquire it out of nowhere. So we went a little bit overboard with the whole pasteurized thing and the legal aspects of it, but it's a big legal issue, and that's really what the concern is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gillian, I'm not sure how to pronounce
Jillian.
Her name. So, Gillian, I apologize.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you freeze raw milk without damaging it?
I think so. Yeah. I know. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I know at certain health food stores they have raw milk frozen. So as long as it's healthy when you freeze it, it should be fine.
Okay. Mary Alice asks, if you're eating kefir daily, do you need to take so many probiotics in the capsule form?
I think you should get healthy bacteria every way possible. I think most of your meals should have fermented, cultured foods. It's not just like, oh, I took a... Because you think about it, kefir is just one type of bacteria. It's the kefir bacteria or kefir bacteria, and that's it. And yogurt is Lactobacillus acidophilus. There's so many different strains of friendly bacteria. You want bacteria, friendly bacteria every way you can, preferably in every meal. So I'm saying go for bacteria in every way, shape, or form.
Okay. Well, Diane and Kristen's question.
Can I just interrupt you? So one of the things we had at our party was this thing called BioBubble, which was soda water that was fermented. It was all fermented grains. Now, grains, again, are not the healthiest thing in the world, but when you ferment them and sprout them, it takes away the problems. And so it was full of, when you ferment, it's full of live bacteria. So it wasn't sweet. It was just bubbly and full of friendly bacteria. So it's another way to get friendly bacteria. If the fermented soda water tastes sweet, it means that it hasn't been fermented enough, and you're getting too much sugar. But if it doesn't taste sweet at all, then you're getting lots of friendly bacteria. So I say get bacteria. Donna Gates has sort of like a bubbly kind of drink that she makes and distributes that's got lots of friendly bacteria. Get the friendly bacteria every way you can.
Okay. Well, again, this sort of ties in, and it's a question that's been on the comments in the comments a fair bit. Diane, Kristen, and Alain have all asked, how do you feel about kombucha?
Yeah, so Donna Gates does not like kombucha. I thought it was, you know, great like everybody else, but Donna Gates says it's a certain type of fermenting. I think she said, you can listen to it in the interview, I think she said root fermented things can cause an increase in yeast and candidas. The bacteria that go through your blood system. So she's the only person I've ever heard that doesn't like kombucha, and that's her reasoning. And again, she's become my guru because I just think she's light years away from everyone else. Also, I think you have to be careful with kombucha if it's sweet, because I bought some kombucha yesterday also for this party, and it was sweet. And if it's sweet, it means it's not fully fermented, because really what happens is the bacteria eats the sweet. That's what it lives off of. And if it's sweet, it hasn't fully eaten the bacteria or the sugar. So you're eating the sugar. So be really careful. If you have kombucha, be really careful it's not sweet.
Okay. Nancy asks, she's heard you mention, she's read somewhere that raw broccoli is no good. Is that correct?
Yeah, we talked about that. Cruciferous vegetables need to be steamed to break off the enzyme inhibitors. Now, we talked about enzyme inhibitors. They're blockers that prevent proper digestion. So you got to steam them to kill the friendly enzyme inhibitors.
Okay. Marisol just wants to add to the question that I asked earlier about taking probiotics and digestive enzymes. She just wants to double check. Can you take the digestive enzymes within minutes of having the probiotics?
Yes. One's got nothing to do with the other. It's totally cool.
Okay. All right. Carola says, I've been having trouble finding chia bran flour. I ended up with two bags of chia bran by mistake. Can I grind this into a flour myself?
So when you say chia bran, the question is, what's in it? So is it ground chia seeds, or is it just the fiber that is the result of the processing out the oils? Because if that's what it is, then you're fine. You can grind that up and you're good to go. If it's just ground chia seeds and it still has the omega-3 oil in it, you can't really cook it with it. The recipes won't work and the oil will get corrupted. So if all the oil's been stripped out of it, then whether it's called bran or fiber or flour, however you want to call it, it's the same thing, and that is perfectly good for bread. So that to me is my baking flour of choice at the moment.
Okay. Judy asks, would you say that refined foods are the major reason for the increase in obesity problems?
No, I would say it's one of them. So everything we talk about is a reason. So, for example, toxins, which we don't talk about too much in this class, but toxins can cause anything that causes a stress-related inflammatory response, and certainly processed foods is one of them. So I would put equally processed foods, mental emotional stress, toxins, and digestion issues, all of these different things as they relate to each other cause inflammatory, chronic low-grade inflammation, which cause an obesity epidemic. But one of them is that another one is just the overload of medications that we're taking. If you look at the exponential increase in medications from everything from antibiotics to vaccinations over the last 20 years, it roughly ties into, correlates with the way the obesity epidemic has grown in, because all of these things cause low-grade inflammation in your body. So yes, processed foods is a huge one. No question, but you got to look at everything that's causing the hormonal problems, basically.
Yeah, I actually have a question on my own behalf, and it's something that Marisol and I have discussed. You said before to bake only with chia bran, not chia ground chia seeds.
Yes.
Because you believe the baking heat will corrupt the oils. Okay.
Yes.
There you go, Marisol.
Yes, they will. You see, omega-3 oils get corrupted very easily. Air, just leaving them out. If you have chia seed oil and you don't refrigerate it, and it's not in like an opaque bottle, they're going to get corrupted. So that oil is just very air, heat, corrupt the oils very, very quickly. So you have to be careful with those oils. Plus, it doesn't taste good. It doesn't have a powdery, the bakery kind of floury consistency. It's totally different.
Yeah,
it doesn't work. It doesn't work with the ground chia seeds. Yeah.
Melissa says, "What is black garlic, and can you buy it?"
Black garlic is something that Sherry put in there, so I'm not even sure what that is. But I think
it's actually fermented. I think. Yeah.
It's a fermented garlic. It looked really good when she was going over with me, but it's not something I've ever used. But black garlic is a fermented type of garlic, and I'm sure you can buy it. At probably health food stores, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Marisol asks about canola oil. We were talking about canola oil in the comments section. She's found Ezekiel products without wheat, but some of them and some products say organic non-GMO canola oil. Would that be okay?
Yeah, so not too much of that. So the canola is a vegetable oil, especially if it's refined. So I would want to know if it's cold pressed or not. If it's cold pressed, it's better. So if it's Ezekiel bread, it's probably cold pressed. But if it's refined canola oil, you just don't want too much refined vegetable oil. So it's everything in moderation in this case. But it's a little bit of a red flag. But sometimes I buy hummus off the shelf, and hummus is made out of chickpeas and tahini, but they'll put some sunflower oil, some safflower oil, something like that. It's not the best thing in the world, but a little bit here and there is okay. It's just that if you eat a diet that's high in processed food, the predominant fats that you're getting, aside from the saturated fats from meat, the predominant fats that you're getting are refined vegetable oils, and that's very inflammatory.
Okay. Well, the question then is about flaxseed oil. It's still quite high in omega 6, isn't it? Is that
no? It's much higher in omega 3. It's over 50% omega 3, which is what you want.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Tom is a little bit overwhelmed with all of this information.
Okay.
So he says, how can I simplify all of this so I can live my life and be healthy and slim?
Yeah. So do you want to simplify it? Listen to a morning and evening visualization. So a visualization at night as you're going to sleep, and every morning listen to a visualization, and every meal that you have, ask yourself, if you were on an island 10,000 years ago, would you be eating this food? And if the answer is yes, you're healing your body. If the answer is no, you're not. It doesn't get any simpler than that.
Okay.
That make sense? Okay. Not to oversimplify it, but that's the reality. You really want to be listen to a morning and evening visualization to take care of mental and emotional stress. Over time, your brain will be rewired from doing that. And eat real foods. Anything that we made, man-made, we didn't make it to heal for your with your health in mind. We made it to sell you, unless it's a specifically health food product. But eat as if you were in an island 10,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Donna says, my morning herbal tea is lemon ginger with probiotic supplement, but But okay. The heat, doesn't the heat, the boiling water, kill the probiotics effectiveness?
It does. Why? Yeah. Why do that? Like, why put the probiotics in the boiling water? That's a mistake. So
yeah.
Don't do that.
I think what it is, it's a tea that she's actually bought that has a probiotic supplement.
You're going to lose that. You're going to lose some of that. So that's not a suitable probiotic supplement.
Okay. Melissa asks,
have a probiotic supplement with cold water and then have your tea, or with lukewarm water.
Okay. Melissa says, I use pure herbs and with them take maca in a liquid, not powder form. Is this okay?
Yeah, maca is not something that I'm necessarily recommending as an essential supplement. It's good for energy and it helps balance hormonal fluctuations for both men and women. But if the maca is what you want, then that's fine.
Okay. Audrey says, can those of us with dairy intolerance take raw milk or kefir without discomfort?
Try it. You'll know right away. In many cases, the answer is no for two reasons. One, because the milk still has lactose, and one of the reasons why we're intolerant is because we can't digest the sugar lactose. So that's one, and the other is because even if you had just drunk it from the beginning, you might not have an intolerance, but because you've acquired an intolerance, your body might still react to it even if it's raw. Now, if it's kefir or yogurt, you're not going to have the lactose. So that's the first thing I would try in terms of raw is the kefir or the yogurt and see how your body reacts to it. But if your nose gets stuffed or you develop any other symptoms, allergic reaction symptoms, then you know that your body's still intolerant to that.
Okay.
Try yogurt made out of coconut. It's a really good alternative.
Yeah. My favorite. Susan says, so when you find that you're not hungry, what is the best way to respond? Obviously not eating is not the thing to do. I find I'm simply not hungry and nothing sounds good. Sometimes when I have days that I don't eat much, then I'm a little hungrier the next day.
Let me stop you. If you're not hungry, the appropriate thing to do is not eat. Because in this weight loss approach, the goal is to be not hungry. The goal isn't to manage your body, the fight cravings, count calories, keep a food journal, any of those type of behavioral modification. The goal isn't to behavioral modify yourself. The goal is to get to this place where you say, I don't know what's wrong with me, I'm not that hungry. So when you get to that place, let your body lose weight. It's basically your body reversing leptin resistance, because remember what Dr. Rosedale said is that when you have leptin resistance, you could have 200 pounds of extra weight on your body, and your body could be acting as if you have no fat on your body. The signaling is not working, so your body's acting as if you have no fat on your body. When the resistance goes away, your brain is able to accurately assess the fat on your body, and it's going to say, well, hold on a second. Where'd this 200 pounds of extra weight come from, or the 50 pounds, or the 20 pounds, or whatever it is, where'd this weight come from? And you're going to not be that hungry. So the actual thing to have happen is to get yourself to the place where you say, I don't know, I'm not that hungry. As long as when you are hungry, you're not craving junk food, then yes, the appropriate thing to do when you're not hungry is not to eat. Absolutely not to eat if you're not hungry. Okay. You do not have to manage yourself anymore. You do not have to eat every 2 hours to keep your blood sugar stable anymore. You do not have to eat a great breakfast anymore. All the rules go out the window. These are rules to get us to the place where our fat programs are turned off and we're no longer leptin resistant. Once we get to that place, the rules go out the window. And I'm the exact same as you in the sense that there are days that I'm, like today, I'm just not that hungry. Well, yesterday I had a party, so I ate cakes, I ate all these kinds of things. Today I'm not hungry. So your body adjusts naturally. And tomorrow maybe I'll be hungry again, who knows. But that's your body self-regulating when it's healthy, the signaling is working properly, when it knows how much fat you have, and when it wants you to be fit and thin.
Okay. Olia asks, is cheese considered a fermented food?
Yes, good question. So raw cheeses are really good. So look for raw cheeses when you can, and they do have friendly bacteria in them. If you go to Wikipedia, also Wikipedia's got a long list of cultured and fermented foods. That's a full list. But again, Donna Schwank's list is pretty long. It's pretty comprehensive too. At culturedfoodlife.com.
Okay. Cheryl just asks if you could just give the name of the company that you get the nuts and seeds from.
To Die For. It's in Australia. Two T O and then the number two. No. How does it? It's not TO. It's the number two, and then D-I-E-F-O-R. So the number 2, D-I-E-F-O-R, to die for. I think they're made in Byron Bay.
Okay. So it's probably best to Google that one. She just wants to know where. Yeah. That's probably the best way. Okay. Donna wants to know, is pure maple syrup a good natural sweetener, or does it aggravate digestion?
Pure maple syrup elevates your blood sugar too quickly, unfortunately. It's healthy for the most part, just like raw honey is healthy, but it elevates your blood sugar too quickly, and that it causes a problem. So I personally don't eat maple syrup.
Okay. Andrea asks, if you are focusing on adding better foods, not eliminating, to not feel deprived right now, does it mess with the progress of fixing your digestion and losing weight if you're eating too many of the things, too many processed foods?
Yes. Yes, it does, but you do the best you can. The answer is yes, it does, but you do the best you can. So keep the focus on adding so that it's a natural transition and your body naturally starts craving the better things more and the processed food less. So it's a natural transition. But yeah, there's no magic to it that, yeah, it's not going to help. But that's the reality of life. And really what we're trying to do is work within those parameters. And the parameters are, look, these are where you're at. This is where you're at right now. I'm not asking you to give up anything right now. What I'm asking you to do is get to the point where you're not craving those things. And we work in all directions to do that. And that's the goal. And that's how you do sustainable weight loss, is by working in all different areas, all the different things that can cause cravings, from mental stress to digestion and everything in between, and work to the place where your body, the signaling is happening properly, and your body wants to be thin, it wants to lose weight, and that's sustainable weight loss. So Dan, I think that's all the time we have for today.
Yep.
And any other questions that we didn't answer, we'll try to answer in the forum. We do have a question and answer session next week, I think on the 13th, 14th, or maybe the 12th, 13th. When do we have our next question and answer session, Dan?
That's next week.
Next week.
Next week.
So we have a question and answer session next week. Next week also, we're going to be talking about, again, one of the most important things, which we haven't really talked about too much, is stress and emotions, because stress causes the same inflammatory problems that digestion does, and emotional problems can cause your body to want to hold on to weight as a form of protection. So these things have to be addressed in order to improve the signaling and let your body want to lose weight. So we're doing this, as I said, from a mind-body perspective. That's what we're talking about next week. In the meantime, everybody have a great week. And any questions that we can answer, we'll answer in the forums, Facebooks, and in the shows next week, and in the question and answer sessions next week. So that's it for now. Thanks very much, and we'll speak to you soon. Take care.